We have been chatting with blind and partially sighted people about their experiences, perhaps positive, some negative, around lockdown and social distancing because it has thrown up perhaps some unintentional barriers. Anyway, today we thought we would speak to Lord Blunkett, and he joins us now. David, thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
What's lockdown been like for you? Because we have been in it now for quite a while.
I think it's been surreal, really. I'm a people person, and I'm certainly not a technological wizard. In fact, I think I'd call myself a technophobe. So the challenge of getting online, and particularly in my case using Zoom, was considerable. I have a number of advantages. I live in a decent-sized house in a very nice part of Sheffield with a woodland about half a mile away. And above all, I have a very accommodating wife who retired last year, and although she's quite busy with many other things, was able to at least give me a hand with the technology side. And it's not something I wanted to do or wanted her to do or would want her to do in the future, because I had that experience with a previous marriage where the person concerned got really fed up with being my sidekick. So I'm very jumpy about that continuing, but it was a miracle that she was around. Because obviously we've taken to things like Zoom, both for my work in the House of Lords, which was primarily online and is now what's called hybrid, part in and part out. My work in the early part of the summer with the University of Sheffield, which was easier, it has to be said. I didn't find giving lectures online or seminars half as difficult as I found trying to debate in the House of Lords, because you can't do, well, I can't. I can't do humour, and I can't do irony, and I really can't do the oratory that I like doing when I'm in debate or delivering a major speech, and you can't do that on Zoom.
It sounds almost as if, like myself, in fact, you know, you've been thrown in to the deep end and told, right, you have to swim with new technology. This is how we will be communicating from now on. And when you throw sight loss into the mix, there's also that added worry.
Originally, I had HAL, but I've got JAWS. And if I really, really put my mind to it, I think I could probably just about have done it. But there are three blind people in the House of Lords, and all three of us have found this a major challenge. And certainly Chris Holmes, who's the Conservative member in the Lords, who's very much younger than Colin Lowe and myself, has found it just as difficult. So he's been coming in via the phone, and I've been using Zoom. And I think that part of the challenge is that technology now is very much based on you being able to see where the mute button is. I'm sure there's a way around this, but of course you couldn't have somebody across to show you. So we've tried explanations. Somebody said to me, oh, you can fix it up so it operates from the space bar. Well, good luck to those who have managed to do that, because even those who could see, and I don't just mean the old codgers in the Lords, were finding this difficult. There was constant cries from the speaker or deputy speaker, unmute, unmute. And people lost their place. They came in, they couldn't hear what other people were saying. So it's been a real experience that I think we'd be very glad to get out of.
Something which I'd like to hear your sort of opinion on is many of our listeners and blind and partially sighted people, not just in the UK but abroad, have talked about social distancing. Getting out there in social distancing is extremely difficult, and we really need the public's input in this and perhaps them to take a bit more responsibility around that. And of course, when it comes to things like shopping or street design, that has thrown up some barriers as well in terms of independence.
I think it's been a problem for the public as much as it has been for blind and partially sighted men and women, partly because they've not known how to handle the advice, the help that would normally be second nature. So instead of perhaps saying to someone, would you like me to guide you? Would you like me to touch your arm? Would you like to follow me? They've been really jumpy about this. I got out regularly with the dog right from the beginning, because I decided if the dog stopped working, it would be a hell of a job getting him back into literally harness again. I think with a cane, it's even more difficult for people, because whilst people jump out of the way, you don't know they've jumped out of the way. You don't know whether they've actually recognised the challenge. and got sufficiently distant from you. You know that when somebody coughs or sneezes in your direction, which it has to be said I experienced, and in shops, what a nightmare. You've got to test out, first of all, whether there's a queue, and therefore you've got to be brave and confident. I think half of this battle is people gearing themselves up to be really confident about doing things you wouldn't normally do, because all of us get screwed up. Even those of us who have been around a long time and done all kinds of things in our lives, you still get screwed up if you're going outside a shop and you say, anyone in the queue? And you're waiting to see if anybody answers. You're waiting to see whether they have the nous, you know, the common sense, to realize that you couldn't see. The dog helps in that regard. But then, of course, when you're in the shop, how many people are allowed in? How can somebody assist you? How fraught are they going to get in there? I think with the use of masks now, that's eased people's fear a little bit. But, of course, people are tending to doing things much more online. I've got two friends from school days. Neither of them can see. They've both got guide dogs. They've been using the online delivery and the support of neighbours very well indeed. But, of course, it has changed the way in which they do things. And what we've discovered from the Sheffield City Partnership Board, which is a coming together of the various agencies and the council and education institutions and the like, and I chair that voluntarily, is that anxiety and loneliness and boredom have been the three top elements that people have ticked when they've been asked what's affected them most. Obviously, unemployment for those who are faced with losing their job or trying to hold on to the job. And regrettably, not enough blind men and women, of course, of working age have got a job. And the fear of the future, what is going to happen in the future. But the one area that I'm really keen to get across, Alan, and I'm sure that some listeners are in this category, is the ones that I mentioned before lockdown took hold right at the end of March in the Lords. And I was saying, I'm very fortunate. Just think for a minute of someone who can't see, who's in a high-rise block, who therefore can't actually even look out of the window and see the birds, and is told because they've got some underlying condition that they have to literally isolate and stay at home. I mean, that is a prison sentence. Now, I imagine that most people have now got out of that. The complete lockdown for those with underlying conditions has been lifted. But what a nightmare in terms of mental health and survival that's been for some people.
Do you think that the responsibility, I use that word loosely, for taking care of that, though, has been almost left to the third sector, who themselves are struggling with the reduction in obviously their income through lots of fundraising events being cancelled for social distancing reasons? Do you think they've really had to pick up the slack on this?
The voluntary community sector have really stepped up, but they've almost, in some places, been left to it. Now, that's been underpinned by mutual aid. People have been coming together at a street or neighbourhood level. But, of course, all of it needs organising. Somebody has to be there with both the organisational wherewithal and the funding to be able to do it. And you're quite right. The funding for voluntary charitable organisations has fallen like a stone. The big organisations, some of them at least, with a customer-facing profile, have been able to draw down on the money that the government allocated. Many others haven't. It's the small and community-based organisations that are right at the sharp end who have not had the resource. And I think that's something that needs to be thought about and debated during the autumn, because they're in danger of going bust. And with the best will in the world, volunteers can't actually do the job if they're not organised as volunteers. It's not a kind of knock on somebody's door and hope you can help, unless you're the neighbour, because you need organising to get to the right place, the right person. They need to know you're coming. They need to know who you are. There are safeguarding issues. The 750,000 people who allegedly signed up to volunteer back in April, 150,000 of them have apparently been ruled out because they didn't pass the test for appropriateness. So you can see there's a big issue there as well.
Do you think there could be a positive in this, in that when it comes to the third sector, that perhaps it could be looked at in better ways to support the third sector through something like this. And for the commercial side of things, to actually look at a demographic with a lot of spending power that they have perhaps excluded in the past?
Yes, on both counts. I think government, that's at Westminster as well as devolved level, need to ensure that local government, because that's the closest organisational democratic body available, should be provided with a community pot that could be used urgently over the next year to sustain those existing and those embryo organisations that have just started up. But they'll need that, because whether you're in Scotland, Wales or England or Northern Ireland, local government's taken a hell of a hammering over the last decade, and they're just not in a position to have the capacity to dream up the money. As far as I can gather, most local authorities have really tried to work with and sustain the voluntary sector, but at a price. On your second point, I think it's really valuable. Some employers have gone bust. Some are struggling to survive and come out of furlough. Some have actually done very well. Retailers in the food business have, on the whole, those who've got online ordering, have done very well. We know that the tech business, the Googles, the Apples, the Microsofts, the Amazons in particular, have done really well. It would be nice to think that in addition to the 2% tax that's been introduced across the UK, in addition to that, they might just step up and say, we have a social responsibility. Small businesses have been doing it. Grocers, butchers, people down the road, they've been doing it. I think those who have actually made quite a lot of money during the lockdown might actually be persuaded, their arms twisted, even if it involves requiring some sort of accountability in their annual statement. That would be quite good, I think, for the future.
Just one final question, David. If there was a piece of advice you could give a visually impaired person when it comes to lockdown and social distancing, they're perhaps nervous about going out or nervous about what could be happening, what piece of advice would you give them?
Overwhelmingly, try and rebuild your confidence if it's been knocked. Take courage with both hands and go for it. It's a damn sight easier for me to say that than for people to do it, and I do know that. And if it's any consolation, going down to London for the first time since the end of March in July, I had to literally force myself to do it. It was a bit like going back into the sea when you've been knocked down by a wave when you were young. You have to just literally force yourself to do it, and it isn't easy, and it won't be for a bit, because all of us rely on building up that confidence that allows us to do things that we never thought we could do, and other people still think we can't.
Lord Blunkett, thank you for speaking with us on R&IB Connect Radio.
You're very welcome.